From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a lot of congressional votes this week, and we'll talk about some of the ones that are most important to many of our listeners. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. With Democrats continuing to drive the national debt up, there have only been a few bright spots in the recent spat of votes on Capitol Hill. On Thursday of this week, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins was joined by Washington Times congressional reporter Harris Alec to talk about the Senate's vote to nullify the president's vaccine mandate for employers.
Harris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me on, Tony. It's wonderful to be with you today. This resolution, as we saw last night, got 52 votes in the Senate. Two moderate Democrats, John Tester and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, crossed over and actually voted for this thing. And I mean, it's very, very difficult, I think, as someone who's followed politics, to see Senator Manchin and Senator Tester vote with all 50 Republicans and not have to be taken back and realize this is a very, very big issue. And it's also probably an issue that is significantly unpopular because, as we know, Senator Tester and Senator Manchin, God bless their hearts, you know, they're not ones to necessarily always play to always break party lines. They only do so if the issue is really pressing and if it's something that's going to significantly impact their constituents and is so politically unpopular. We saw this with the Kavanaugh hearings, and we're seeing it again now with this vaccine mandate. And this measure now goes over the House, where, as you said, 212 Republicans have co-sponsored a discharge petition, a petition that would essentially force this bill to the floor if House Speaker Nancy Pelosi does not want to bring it up herself. As of right now, they need about five Democrats to sign out of this petition. They have about a month, just because of the way the House procedures end up working. They wouldn't be able to bring this legislation to the floor until January 4th or January 5th, which I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people are going to be home for the holidays. A lot of these congressmen are going to be home for the holidays. They're going to be hearing about this issue from their constituents, specifically as most of these mandates really start coming into effect. They've only been eased in certain industries as of right now, but starting in early January, they're going to be effective for most of the country, provided the courts don't issue any further stays. And this is going to be really problematic. I mean, I'm talking to Republican congressmen, I'm talking to labor organizations, I'm talking to trade organizations and business groups who are hearing from their constituents, hearing from their members every single day, who are saying that this is something they're deathly afraid of. And most people who oppose these mandates are not anti-vaccine. Most of them have, you know, obviously have their booster shots. Most of them have been vaccinated, but they oppose the idea that their jobs could be taken away from them simply because they choose not to be vaccinated. It's kind of funny because President Biden obviously has been the Amtrak president, or he sold himself as the Amtrak president, but today Amtrak CEO testified in front of the House Transportation Committee, and he said that they're going to start cutting services to certain lines simply because of the fact that 1,200 of their employees are not vaccinated. That's potentially 1,200 people who are going to lose their jobs because of a vaccine mandate being implemented by the so-called Amtrak president, Tony.
So, Harris, let me ask you this question. Is this more than a symbolic vote, given the uphill climb in the House? The fact that, as you said, many of these members are going to be back in their districts, so they're going to be hearing from their constituents during the holidays.
Absolutely. I mean, look, this obviously takes a this obviously faces very, very long odds in the House. You know, House Democrats have a way of sticking together more so than Senate Democrats do. But I think more than that, I mean, what we saw last night was we saw 52% of the, you know, 52 members of the Senate rebuke a sitting president for his vaccine mandate. Even if this issue doesn't come to a head in the House, it's something that has obviously galvanized so many people to even come up with a CRA vote. I mean, the Congressional Review Act has only been invoked in so many instances. You know, obviously, you know, people can say, well, when if this doesn't end up passing the House, the president's going to veto it, and that's probably going to end up being the case. But I think, as Senator John Hoeven said yesterday, it would be a very, very powerful rebuke of the president and his vaccine mandate if both houses of Congress, you know, decided to invoke this. Decided to invoke the CRA and overturn this mandate by a bipartisan margin. The very, very fact that, again, Senator Manchin and Senator Tester broke party lines shows just how significantly unpopular this mandate is as of right now.
I think you're absolutely right. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Harris, thanks so much for joining. It's always great to talk with you.
Always a pleasure, Tony. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Harris Alec with The Washington Times. Joining me now by phone to talk about the importance of this push against the Biden administration and also to give us an update on the efforts to raise the debt ceiling in the Senate is Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota, who is a member of the Senate Budget Committee, Banking Committee, and Armed Services Committee. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
So we were just discussing, you probably heard part of the conversation there with Harris, that you know there's going to be pressure on members of the House, Democratic members, to support this, just as we saw the bipartisan effort there in the Senate. Of course, the president committed to veto this. But this is quite significant because I think it sets up another one of those contrasts between the Republican and Democratic leadership bodies of this country.
There's no question, Tony. And you know, the one thing about the House of Representatives, and I had the great honor of serving 6 years there, I know you did as well, you know it's designed by our founders to be responsive to the voters, and you have a very narrow majority, of course, that led by Democrats, but that narrow majority, of course, doesn't have a lot of room for partisan politics if, in fact, they want to maintain the majority. And so I think it's going to be fascinating to see what these swing district Democrats do when confronted with this, you know, very obvious, in my view, very obvious opportunity to differentiate themselves from their socialist brothers and sisters that are really running the Democratic House.
What would you say to those who say, well, look, this is, you know, the president's going to veto this. This is a waste of time. Why are you doing this?
Well, first of all, a couple of things. One is force the veto. Second of all, symbols do matter. If it's a symbolic vote, it's a reflection. By the way, you know, the country is about this, divided about the same way on this specific issue. It's when you get to the finer points of it, like you can lose your job. You know, the fines to businesses are like $13,600 per, you know, violation. I mean, that's when it really loses its steam. And so I think it's important to state the case. I think the votes matter because it sends the message. And remember, it also provides an opportunity, along with the courts. As you know, the Fifth Circuit has already put a nationwide stay on this mandate. It provides an off-ramp for the president if he wants to say, look, I think this is a good idea. I tried to mandate it. The courts have put a stay on it. You know, the Congress has spoken. You know, the people have spoken through their representatives. I'll withdraw the rulemaking. He could actually, withdraw the executive order. He could actually be somewhat heroic in this if he handled it the right way. And you know, I don't have a lot of hope for that, Tony, by the way. But
you know, Bill Clinton responded that way back in the 90s, kind of saying, all right, look, I know I'm boxed in. And he looked reasonable. So I think you're absolutely right. We just got about a minute left. I want to quickly get your read on the actions by the Senate earlier today to set up the debt ceiling increase. Where does that stand?
So we're going to have the final vote tonight. It, as you know, they boxed a lot of members in, all of us in a tough spot. There is the cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, some farm programs, other things that are important to the country that need to be extended. Not the cuts, but the you know repeal of them for a while because of this pandemic. But they tied that to a procedural you know rule that allows Democrats to raise the debt ceiling all by themselves, something that we've said all along, that Mitch McConnell said all along they'd have to do. So it's a little bit wonky. It's a little bit weird. It's going to pass with probably 12, 14, 15 Republicans joining all the Democrats. Tough spot to be in, but next week it'll be Democrats alone that will be raising the debt ceiling, and they should because they're doing all the debt increasing.
Well, that's right. They're doing all the spending. Senator Cramer, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. And if I don't talk to you before, have a very Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Coming up, we've talked about some of the bad provisions that were removed from the National Defense Authorization Act. But what were some of the good amendments that made it in? We'll talk about that after the break with Congressman Mark Green. He joins us from the House floor. So don't go away. A lot more Washington Watch still to come on this edition.
Are you struggling to spend consistent time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. FRC's two-year Bible reading plan helps you to approach daily Bible reading with an intentional focus of diving deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks into cultural issues. By studying the Bible, we can see the grandeur of God unfold throughout the past. The Stand on the Word reading plan takes you through daily scripture in an engaging manner to help you stay grounded in God's truth. All wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible as a way to understand the world. Start this adventure today with Family Research Council. When you sign up, we'll text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
God is the author of life and has created man in His image. Therefore, we must respect the inherent dignity of every human life from conception until natural death. That is why Family Research Council works to pass laws that protect the unborn. To keep you informed on this issue, FRC has created online maps that illustrate progress in each state on key pro-life laws. That way, you can know where your state stands on protecting unborn babies. Check out our pro-life maps at frc.org/pro-life-maps. At Family Research Council, it is important to us that we stay connected with you and that you stay informed. With the increase in tech censorship of conservatives and Christians, we've decided to be proactive to make sure we don't go completely dark due to censorship. That is why we've created a tech subscription platform. If we get canceled, you can stay informed and still find updates on faith, family, and freedom. How? Just text STAND to 67742 to sign up for our text alerts, and you will get FRC's content straight to your phone. Again, just text STAND to 67742, and you will get special alerts on the biggest stories of the day. You can stay informed with just a simple text. We want you to be able to stay connected with like-minded community and to always have access to our content. Stay connected and informed. Just text STAND to 67742.
Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, over the past couple of days, we've highlighted on this program how efforts by Republican lawmakers and those at the grassroots, that means you, were successful in stripping away many of the bad provisions from the National Defense Authorization Act. As we mentioned, over 200,000 contacts were made by FRC supporters, Washington Watch listeners, to members on Capitol Hill. And it was amazing to see actually these bad provisions removed. Now, this is an annual must-pass spending bill that authorizes funding and sets policy for the U.S. military and defense programs. Now, in particular, we've highlighted that portion that would have forced young women to register for the draft. But Republican lawmakers were also able to get some good language added into the NDAA. Among them was amendment banning dishonorable discharges for service members who refuse the COVID shots. With me now to talk about this and more is the congressman who introduced that amendment, U.S. Congressman Mark Green, who is a decorated combat veteran, ER physician, as well as a member of the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. Great to hear your voice.
And I know you're just off the House floor and you're going to have to run and vote here in a moment, so we're going to jump right into this. Tell our viewers and listeners what this amendment means for the men and women in uniform that you were able to get into the NDAA.
Well, there was this big threat, Tony, that they would basically discharge with a dishonorable discharge or an other than honorable discharge members who refused the vaccine. Their point, of course, is that it's a failure to obey a direct or verbal order. But the truth of the matter is we don't have longitudinal data. The data we have right now looks pretty good, but the longitudinal data is just not there. So if a soldier chooses not to get that, they were going to give them a dishonorable discharge. So my amendment essentially.
Hey, Mark, if I can stop you for just a moment, explain a little bit about what that means to get a dishonorable discharge.
Well, it devastates the life of a soldier. If you have a dishonorable discharge, you can't buy a gun. You can't get basically employment everywhere you go. They ask, did you serve in the military? Yes. What was your discharge? Well, it was dishonorable. Well, no one hires people like that. I mean, it would devastate the life of any soldier. And we're talking about people, you know, 18 years of service, multiple tours of duty. Great, right? You know, these are folks that are doing outstanding work for the country, and they're talking about, or we're talking about, dishonorably discharging them, putting them
just because
that.
They would not get the COVID shot.
Exactly. And the president, you know, I passed the amendment unanimously in the House Armed Services Committee, meaning 100% of the House Democrats voted for my amendment, meaning, you know, protecting these folks. And the president wanted it stripped off. So it just tells you where Joe Biden was headed with all this.
That's amazing. I mean, and most people don't really understand what a dishonorable discharge means. It doesn't mean, it's not like you just get fired from a job. This follows you all of your life and is it really makes you a second class citizen. And as you pointed out, these are men and women who have served honorably, put their lives on the line. Many of them have suffered the consequences of multiple combat tours. And we're going to dishonorably discharge him because they won't submit to this shot. Amazing.
That's exactly what the president wanted to do.
Well, thank you for standing up for them and leading the effort and not giving up. And this is what I think made the NDAA effort this time successful. And I've been part of a lot of these battles over the last 20 years. And oftentimes you shoot and scoot. You fire a shot and then you move on to the next battle. But you guys stuck with this, kind of everybody leaned in on this, and we got a positive outcome. Still some issues with the NDAA. I'm not going to gloss over everything, but by and large, a good outcome.
Yeah, the trick with this is I think a lot of people didn't understand that when we passed it the first time on the floor of the House, that was to get it to conference committee. You know, the floor of the House is the most liberal part of the process for making a bill. And to fix these kinds of bills, we have to get them into conference committee. So a lot of Republicans voted to move it to conference committee, which confused some people. But that was so that we could strip red flag laws, you know, drafting our daughters, and, of course, get amendments like mine on permanently.
One more question for you, Congressman Mark Green. Last night, the Senate voted to overturn President Biden's shot or test mandate for businesses. And we were just talking with Senator Cramer a few moments ago. That comes over to the House now, this Congressional Review Act. I know 212 Republicans have already signed on to it, but you got to get to 218 for a discharge petition to force a vote on the House floor. Do you think this has a chance in the House?
I would give it a, you know, 50-50 shot. I mean, there are Democrats who said they support it. You know, I haven't done a whip count on it. Will we get six more? It's hard to say, but I think there's at least a 50-50 shot.
Well, we'll be watching that very closely. I think it's important to give the American people a voice in this, and they do that through their elected representatives.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
I know you got to run. Thanks so much for taking time to step off the floor to join us, Congressman Green.
Thanks, Tony. And if I don't talk to you again before the holidays, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, my friend. The same to you.
You can find out more about Representative Mark Green, as well as information on how your views are shared with Congress through FRC's efforts, when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
In the season our nation is in, it is necessary for Christians to pray, to stand for truth, and to, above all things, seek after the Lord. Every Wednesday, FRC and FRC Action President Tony Perkins hosts the Pray, Vote, Stand broadcast to encourage brothers and sisters in Christ to focus our attention on the Lord first and in every aspect of our lives. The purpose of this is to help equip you to pray, vote, and stand for biblical truth in the midst of a confusing time in our culture. Tony is joined by experts, elected leaders, and Christians for this weekly half-hour program to help you see through the fog that's being created by the biased lenses of the mainstream media. This year, let's commit to pray for our nation, to stand for truth, and to seek the Lord first. To watch the Pray Vote Stand weekly broadcast, visit PrayVoteStand.org. That's PrayVoteStand.org.
In a culture of gender confusion, there aren't many examples of godly manhood. But men need a model of leadership they can follow. Stand Courageous Men's Ministry seeks to help men develop a strong biblical character, build and rebuild relationships, and make commitments that will move men closer to God's good purpose and design. Men who will stand courageous. Find an event near you at standcourageous.com.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital, make a difference in your community, and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app. This tool serves to bring Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. With the Stand Firm app, you will have all our content available at your fingertips and will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent radio programs, social media posts, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download FRC's Stand Firm app, or by going to frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday, as you just heard from Senator Cramer, the House successfully stripped a provision from the National Defense Authorization Act that would have forced women to register for the draft. Joining Tony on Wednesday to talk about some of these victories was Representative Chip Roy of Texas.
Congressman Chip Roy, welcome back to the program.
Happy to be on, Tony. I apologize for not being there in person. Obviously, as you know Congress well, I'm in one of those phone booths in the cloakroom because we're about to embark on 30 votes tonight. So we got a vote series I can't get out of.
I completely understand. I tell people all the time, like they say with live programming, never do live programming with children, animals, or politicians. So, but we appreciate your leadership on the National Defense Authorization Act, because you were successful in removing. I mean, you voted against the measure because there's still problems in it. But you, because of your leadership, you were able to get a lot of the most egregious measures removed from that bill. Tell us about it.
Well, Tony, I appreciate you saying that about me, but let me just be clear. We wouldn't have been able to do that without the strong support of conservative grassroots across the country, Family Research Council, notably, and in particular, your willingness to score it. That cannot be overstated, the extent to which that was helpful. I give a shout out to Concerned Women for America and others that got involved with this fight. But at the end of the day, you can't win a fight if you don't pick it. And that's the thing that I want everyone to understand is the message. As we head into the remaining of this year, the one more year of this Congress, we have elections next November, and we look forward to 2023. We got to remember that if you don't pick the fight, you can't win it. And this is one that everybody just gave up on. They said, well, the forces of political correctness are going to win. We can't win this. Too many Republicans already supported it. But we laid into this fight. We wrote op-eds. We went to the floor. We spoke. We did social media, Family Research Council echoed that, and you did a lot of great work. National Review did some good stuff. A lot of my Freedom Caucus colleagues got in the fight. And at the end of the day, lo and behold, we were able to win this fight. Now we got to keep fighting, but we were able to win this time and prevent our daughters from being drafted, along with also standing up against vax mandates, standing up against an office of extremism, which would be used for nefarious purposes, and to try to push back on some of the worst parts of gender identity stuff and other provisions. We weren't completely successful, which, as you note, is why I voted no in the end, because there were provisions in there I still couldn't support. But it's a vastly improved bill because of our work.
Well, Congressman, I want to underscore something you just said a moment ago, and that is that we can't win if we don't fight. And the fact that that you took a stand, and I want to underscore this, that the National Defense Authorization Act is almost like this sacrosanct piece of legislation. You have to support it. In fact, you took grief from your Republican colleagues for opposing it, even in the early stages when all of the bad stuff was in it. But you went further. You challenged the leadership of the Republican Party in the Congress that if they supported this, you could not support them for leadership positions, given how bad the measure was before it was cleaned up.
Look, it's important to lay down markers when the key things are at stake. As I said today in an interview about this, if we can't fight on these issues, Tony, if we can't fight to stop our daughters from being drafted, if we can't stop and fight to make sure that we know there's just differences between men and women, if we can't defend life, protect life, then what are we fighting for? I mean, we can get in here and argue about tax rates and corporate tax rates, and we can argue about all our, there is important things, but what are we fighting for? You got to pick a fight in order to win it. And we were able to do that. And yeah, I laid into leadership and said, and I meant it, if someone's going to draft my daughter, forcibly conscript my daughter, I can't support that person for a leader in this body, in the party, or for president. And so it's important to say these things. It's not personal, but it is very important for the country that we draw some lines in the sand and then we stand up and fight for them.
Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't happen every time. But when we're willing to go to the mat for these, I think, core principles. These are core principles that are worth fighting for. Now, I'm not for rolling up your sleeves and going out back every time something doesn't go the way you want it to, but there are some things that are worth fighting for, and when you do that, oftentimes you prevail. In this process, rarely do you get everything you want, but you certainly can make things better, and I commend you for being willing to do that.
Well, Tony, let me just say right back at you, I commend you all for being willing to get in this fight, willing to score these votes. It was important. It moved some people. And those first 80 votes, I think 79 whatever votes that we had against the first bill helped set the stage for this one and gave us leverage. And that's what I keep telling people. You fight to get leverage in this town.
Right.
And if you stand up and fight, the people follow and we'll get some good things. We've got a lot of work to do to move forward, but we need to stand up for the people. They sent us here to challenge the swamp, not immerse ourselves in it.
You're absolutely right. Congressman Chip Roy, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for stepping off the floor to talk with us.
Hey, my honor. God bless you. Merry Christmas to everybody and your listeners.
All right. Merry Christmas to you as well. And folks, I want to thank you. As I mentioned yesterday, many of you, we sent over 200,000 pieces of correspondence, emails, calls to Capitol Hill on this, and it was heard.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.